Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome again to the Steve Jones Show. Steve will be joining us from the Sunbury Motors studio here in just a few moments. I stumbled across something today that I thought was really, really ironic and almost crazy funny. You know, we're almost a year out from Deflategate, the Deflategate game. So you would assume at that point that the officials and that the NFL would be well prepared for every possibility, and they would want anything with any Patriots game in the playoffs now to be absolutely perfect. Well, there's a report that seems to be pretty well confirmed by the Massachusetts State Police that the NFL needed a police escort to get some of the footballs and the gauges to the Patriots game. You can't make this stuff up. But at about 2:30 Saturday, Massachusetts State Police at the Logan Airport were notified by the Hyatt Hotel on the airport property that the officials at Gillette Stadium for that afternoon's Patriots playoff game, and that's the game with the Chiefs, of course, had left the official specifically designed footballs and pressure gauges behind at the hotel. The hotel had been contacted by the NFL, and after it realized the equipment had been left behind, state police then contacted NFL security officials at Gillette Stadium. NFL security said to the state police, "Can we have some assistance in bringing the footballs and gauges to the stadium?" And the footballs that were, by the way, the K-balls, the ones that were for kicking, were then brought by police escort to the stadium. Honestly, you can't make this stuff up. This is just absolutely too good for words. So yeah, 2 days before the one-year anniversary of Deflategate, they have Deflategate Part 2. Or Gagegate, maybe. They left the kickballs, the K-balls, and the gauges, the officials did, in the hotel room. Now, there is, fortunately, a Patriots playoff game that is not going to be in New England, so maybe this one will actually go normal. By the way, it's still not, Deflategate itself is not order, is not over. The NFL and Tom Brady are still in court, so we could have a very fun situation coming up in the AFC Championship game this weekend, where the NFL presents, or the representatives from the NFL present the Patriots with the AFC Championship trophy, assuming they win, and of course, you know, possibly the Super Bowl trophy as well. So there you have it. A hotel employee retrieved the equipment from the room. The state police then got there in the afternoon, along with a hotel employee, drove the K-balls and gauges to Gillette Stadium approximately an hour later, and then turned everything over to the National Football League. Just when you thought everything was going back to normal in the NFL, the craze continues. And I think now we have Steve Jones in. We now have Steve Jones hooked up from the Bryce Jordan Center.
I did it in record time, believe me. there were literally no missteps. Like, okay, you better do this as fast as you can. All right. I went as fast as I could, brother.
Well, okay. You know, we got an interesting, we started off with the story that I messaged you about earlier today in the rundown, that the NFL needed a police escort to get the football, the K-balls and the gauges to the Patriots game. As I said a few minutes ago, if you're the National Football League and you have a Patriots home game with all this stuff that's gone on in the last year, aren't you extra sure that you have everything squared away? How in the world do you forget the balls and gauges at a Patriots game for a playoff game? That one baffles me.
Well, it's good that this comes down to the officials again. I mean, what do you think's doing this?
Well, you're right. It's the officials that left them in the hotel room.
Yeah. You know, the old saying, you got one job. You got one job, man.
One thing. You have to do one thing.
Uno.
Bring the footballs and gauges.
Bring the footballs and the gauges with you. Okay. Other than that, this league is amazing. No, think about it. This league is amazing. Hey. Okay, you have Shaq Thompson of Carolina puts out on, I don't know, Instagram, Twitter, whatever it was, Seahawks. And it was derogatory. You've got the gauges and the footballs left at the hotel. You've watched an entire league take something called Deflategate and mess it up beyond words. And turned it into something it shouldn't have been. Yet this group is successful. They can do everything wrong. And they make money. And they do everything wrong.
You just wonder how many times you get away with something like this before fans finally go, all right, this is just ludicrous now.
But the games are good. Can you go through a fall without the Steelers?
Sadly, no.
Well, no, I mean, that wasn't a derogatory question.
No, it's not, but you're right. You're absolutely right. No matter how much they mess this up, I still want to watch come September. I am locked in on a Sunday afternoon.
All right, here's your rundown. The ball's being left for the Chiefs-Patriots game. We'll get into more of that a little bit later. New members of the College Football Playoff Selection Committee, Mid-American and Conference USA, will have reps on the committee. Is that good or bad? I think it doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. Look, it is what it is. I know you're all for the little guy, right? And I understand that. You're all for the little guy. Houston, for example, beats Florida State in the Peach Bowl this year. You're all for the little guy. I understand that. But as I pointed out, ratings-wise, people don't care about the little guy.
Well, actually, believe it or not, Steve, in this case, I'm wondering if it is a good idea to have more than one from a smaller conference on this committee.
I don't think it matters. I think their job is to pick the four best teams that have them play, and I think you have responsible people from the MAC and responsible people from Conference USA that have enough football skill and ability to look around and say, I think these are the four best teams.
But I have to ask you.
I don't think it has anything to do. They're smart enough to know there's no avenue to, like, wow, this is great. We're going to put Toledo in. No.
Well, that's what I was just going to ask you. I mean, I mean, no disrespect to anybody on the committee, but it's hard sometimes to be truly neutral if you do have some sort of loyalty somewhere. And if you've come from the Mid-American Conference or the Conference USA, what if all things on the table are equal and all of a sudden there's a team from Conference USA or Mid-American that have a shot in there? Are they going to get a nod now that they wouldn't have before because they have two members of a smaller conference on the committee? Because, you know, maybe deep down they want to see that smaller conference team get a shot.
There are 15 votes. Okay? They have 2 out of 15. Whoa. Unless they somehow sway a whole bunch of people in the room, it's not going to happen. Now, that doesn't mean, for example, Boise State can't go through and they're undefeated, or in this case, Houston went for a long period of time undefeated. But you get that. Strength of schedule means something. Strength of schedule means a lot. And when I was doing the Penn State-Northwestern game in basketball on Saturday night, in the pregame show, what did I specifically mention? One team played the 101st best schedule in the country, and the other team had played the 27th best schedule in the country entering the game. Well, Penn State was the one that played the 27th best schedule in the country. Northwestern was the one that played the 101st best schedule in the country. Which one looked like it was battle-tested in that game on Saturday night? Strength of schedule means something. Hey, you're going to tell me that, hey, this is great. We're going to pick, I don't know, let's pick a really good MAC team, Northern Illinois. All right? You're going to pick Northern Illinois undefeated over a one-loss Penn State team, for example, that played Ohio State, Michigan, and Michigan State. And let's just say, for whatever, they went 2-1 against those three teams. Now, which one is more battle-tested? The one that played Toledo, Bowling Green, Central Michigan, or the one that had to run the gauntlet of Michigan, Michigan State, and Ohio State?
I'm not disagreeing with you on any of that. What I'm saying is, should anyone with any loyalties or leanings in with any of the teams involved be involved in this selection committee?
But they all do. You don't think Condoleezza Rice feels strongly towards Stanford? You don't think Jeff Long of Arkansas feels strongly toward the Southeastern Conference?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Because of where they went to school, there's a loyalty there.
Well, I mean, he's the athletic director at Arkansas.
No, I was thinking Condoleezza Rice, though.
She was the president at Stanford. I mean, after a while, you're like, look, you're not going to go out and find 15 completely neutral people here. I mean, for goodness sakes, you're a talk show host. Tell me one topic we've discussed that you're neutral on.
No, I'm not. That's exactly my point. And that's exactly why I feel the way I do. Because it's very, very hard to be neutral.
And you're average. And you're average. Okay? And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, everybody, yeah, this whole thing about I could be completely neutral about whatever. Look, I sit down in the college football playoff, and you know, and I'm on the committee. I could honestly sit there. I can look at everybody and say whatever. But if Penn State were involved, I mean, I'd have some strong feelings about Penn State.
But you're right, though. With 15 voices on the committee, it makes it a little harder to have an agenda pushed through.
Well, that's why you have so many people on it. That's why you look at the NCAA basketball tournament committee. It's not three guys in a room.
All this could be resolved if you just have conference champions playoff.
Yeah, but then you got to seed them, you got to place them. I mean, there's still things you have to do.
Yeah, you'd still have to seed them. That's true.
You don't. Right. You'd have to do that, and I think eventually somewhere down the road this gets to 8. That's fine. It could get to 8. John Gruden wants no replay in the NFL. We'll come back and discuss that one in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
This year's New Year's resolution at Sunbury Motors Kia is easy. Wanna see you in a Kia. Sunbury Motors Kia. Easy as in 0% APR financing for up to 66 months on all remaining 2015 models, as well as the 2016 Sereno, Sportage, Sedona, Forte, and the iconic Soul. And remember, all new Kias come with an easy 10-year, 100,000-mile limited powertrain warranty. So with a huge selection of quality Kias, all clearly sale priced, backed by one of the best warranties in the business, well, it just doesn't get any easier than this to ring in the new year with a new Kia. So resolve to come down to the strip in Hummel's Wharf or at Sunbury Motors SunburyMotors.com. 2016 is going to be easy at Sunbury Motors Kia. SMC, selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Warranty is a limited powertrain warranty. For details, see retailer or go to Kia.com.
Welcome back. And, of course, what did Kevin ask during the break?
What did I ask during the break?
You asked if it was Dollar Dog Night.
Oh, well, you're at the BJC. I was just curious to see if it was Dollar Dog Night tonight.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if it is. I don't know what promotion they have. I mean, I probably should have tonight's promotion memorized from heart. This is the only game over a 27-day span they play here.
You haven't been there very much, so really.
Well, I mean, this is the only game from January 10th to February 6th that Penn State plays in the Jordan Center. I mean, think about that. That's 27 days. You play one home game over 27 days in your building? Really? Wisconsin's played four home games already this year. This will be their seventh conference game tonight, so they'll have 4-3. You know when Penn State plays its fourth game in the Jordan Center? February 6th. Wisconsin's already played four at home.
It is not Dollar Dog Night tonight, but it is four tickets, four subs, four drinks for $40. And
the Subway four-pack.
Yep, oh, yeah. The Subway full court four-pack. And here's the best part, Steve. It's going to be a very, very busy night in the student section because it's selfie stick night.
Okay.
Yes, social media night. So everybody's going to be snapping selfies and posting it on social media. Steve, are you and Dick going to do a selfie so that we can see it on social media tonight? At that point, I think social media would explode. And not from people sharing it, Dick, either. Just the fact that you two did a selfie on social media might explode the internet.
Dick wrote a great column today in the Daily News on 60 years of the Big Five at the Palestra. Unbelievably good. So, I told you the Shakespeare story, right?
Probably.
We're at Paris in Las Vegas, and the waiter comes up, and he sees the Penn State coats, and he says, "Hey, I'm from Pennsylvania. I'm from Philadelphia." And Jeff Tarman says, "Well," he says, "this is Dick Girardi." And he looks at him and goes, "No. Oh, no. Wow." Steph Spangas, "I feel like I've met Shakespeare."
No, you didn't tell me that one.
So this morning I texted Dick. I read the column and I said Shakespeare couldn't have written anything like that. And he says and he texted me back. He says and WS, as in William Shakespeare. He says WS didn't have a jump hook either.
Just so you can plan ahead, Steve, senior night on March 3rd will be Dollar Dog Night. So make your plans now.
Okay. We're going to talk to a Wisconsin beat writer coming up. Talk a little hockey today as well, about the Penguins. We're at the Jordan Center here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, the Sunbury Motors Studio, mobile today.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Hola, buenos dias. Guten Abend. Great to have you with us. We're at the Jordan Center where it is not Dollar Dog Night. I'm sorry, Kevin.
But the sub deal is pretty good.
I know that you had hopes.
Well, tickets, subs, drinks, that's almost as good as Dollar Dog Night.
Sure. Well, let's get rolling here with this day in sports history. 1911, the first Monte Carlo Motor Rally took place. Now nobody watches it.
No, it's not true. That's not true. Worldwide, it's the largest auto racing broadcast.
And it ranks where? In the top 20?
Actually, it's in the top 10.
40.
That meant that what we mentioned 50. Yesterday, it was in the top 10.
What are you talking about?
Most watched
top 10 yesterday. Listen to those.
No. It was a different top 10. Most watched sporting events in the world. We did the United States. The world, it's number 5.
Tremendous. 1979, the Steelers beat the Cowboys 35-31 in Super Bowl 13. That was the one where Jackie Smith had the unfortunate drop in the end zone.
They made a movie about that one, too, didn't they?
I don't know.
Wasn't that Bloody Sunday?
I don't know. 1985, Dennis Pop Van tied Bobby Orr's record for 270 NHL goals by a defenseman. 1990, John McEnroe was disqualified and expelled for throwing a tantrum and using abusive language at an official while leading Michael Penforz in the Australian Open. He was the first person to be thrown out of a Grand Slam in 27 years. He was fined $6,500 and kicked out of the tournament. In 2002, Michael Jordan with the Wizards played his first game in Chicago as a visiting player. The Wizards beat the Bulls 77-69. And that is how Ray Clay lost his job as the Bulls public address announcer. Because he wanted to do his customary, and from North Carolina, Michael Jordan. And they wouldn't let him do it, and he thought it was wrong, and he thought the crowd would love it and the whole thing, and the Bulls told him no, and they fired him. There you go.
By the way, the movie I was thinking of was Black Sunday.
Oh, yeah. Jack's talked about that. Yeah,
yes.
Every time we see a blimp, he gets a little antsy.
Yeah, because it's about a blimp that actually is supposed to be a terrorist attack on the Super Bowl.
All right, let's talk hockey for a moment. There was that great movie with Jean-Claude Van Damme at a Penguins game where he stopped terrorists. See, we can relate anything. Josh Getzlaf is with the Penguins radio and TV networks. He joins us now. Josh, welcome. Great to have you with us. Josh, what is the current – they've made the deal – With the Kings. So what's the chemistry of this team like right now?
Well, I think it's still, at least now with the addition of Carl Hagelin, as you mentioned, it's still kind of a work in progress there for the top six. I know that their first line, Penguins, as far as Chris Kunitz, Patrick Hornquist, and Sidney Crosby, have really started to find a rhythm. I think the three of them started to gel, and of course they had a lot of success last year and kind of rekindled here under Mike Sullivan over the last couple of weeks, and have started to kind of pace the Penguins' top six. But obviously Carl Hagelin's now just playing in his third game since being acquired. He's only had one full practice with the Penguins, which was yesterday. But putting him and his speed with two obviously high-class players, and Evgeny Malkin and Phil Kessel, you'd figure would work. And so far I think they've played pretty well together, but definitely still finding their rhythm.
Mike Sullivan has his own way of doing things. Give us an idea what imprint he has as to how he wants the Penguins to play versus the way Johnson and play.
Well, Mike Sullivan is constantly preaching resiliency with his team. A lot of times you'll hear coaches say certain buzzwords and whatnot, and a lot of times maybe they'll fall on deaf ears. But when you watch the Penguins and you see recently, especially once they've started to kind of adapt to his style and take on his identity as head coach, they've they've kind of fallen into what he is. I mean, they've become more resilient. When they've been trailing in games, especially after two periods, which really the last two seasons was all but an automatic loss for the Penguins, they've come back and tied games up, found a way to get that precious point, which we know is going to be huge coming down the stretch. But, yeah, he's talked a lot about being resilient, a lot about being mentally tough, and I think that they're really starting to believe in that, and it's shown on the ice here. Is they've kind of never really been out of a game under him on the last couple weeks or so.
Crosby, yeah, I did it. When he signed his new contract, I did do a piece on other great players that once they get past the age of 25, their production is never the same. It doesn't mean it's down, you're getting 30 points a season, but it's not at the same level it was before. When you watch him play now, what looks different to you?
To be honest, I think that it wasn't necessarily that the effort wasn't there in the beginning of the year. It was just that the points weren't falling. I mean, the puck wasn't getting into the back of the net. He wasn't necessarily getting the bounces. And it may just sound kind of cliche to say that, but I really believe watching him that that's kind of how things were falling for him in the beginning of the year. But he stuck with it. Obviously, once the power play started to get going, there's no coincidence that his points saw an uptick as well, because we know that he's very important to the Penguins' power play. But here recently, watching him the last, month or so, he's just kind of seemed to find his old self again. I think he's played eight games since the turn of the new year, and in four of those games, he has multi-point efforts. So he's really starting to pace this Penguin offense a little bit. I think, you know, naturally you look at the league, and a lot of people say that, and it's true, when you look around, that it's a young player's league. And you watch these 18-year-olds that are coming in and lighting it up, there's no change in that. I think that's kind of starting to become what the NHL is. These younger guys are stepping in and immediately making an impact. We're going to see a guy tonight here with the Flyers and their defense, Shane Gostisbehere, who's second in the NHL among rookies in scoring among defensemen. He's only played, I think, less than 30 games. So a lot of these young guys have stepped in and made an impact. As far as Sid's concerned, I think that recently he's definitely started to turn it on a bit. Definitely was slow in the beginning of the year, but there were a lot of Penguins that would fall into that category. But he's definitely turned it up a notch here over the last month or so.
It seems like Malkin's been the rock of Gibraltar on this team. Would that be fair?
Yeah, absolutely. I think when Sid was kind of struggling to find his scoring touch, and obviously Phil Kessel still has not really hit his stride here yet, but Evgeny Malkin's been, that's a good way to put it, the rock of Gibraltar there for this team, straight down the middle, really carried them. Of course, when they had that really bad loss back in November to New Jersey, he was the one who spoke up and carried it after that. I think he had 7 points in his next four games after that and really put the team on his back and made the difference for them in a tough time, along with Marc-Andre Fleury, who's been extremely consistent this entire year. And obviously he was sidelined for eight games in mid-December with a concussion, but he's another one who really has been strong for them. And Evgeny Malkin, as far as the offense is concerned, yeah, definitely supplying the bulk of it through much of the season.
What has it been about Fleury? Has it been just sharper than sharp, or has he had the ability to direct his defense and be more of a leader behind them? What's it been?
I think he's really locked in. Mike Bales is the Penguins goaltending coach, and ever since he's come in here, he kind of took over Fleury after, as you'll remember, those struggles he had in the postseason, and really was mentally and physically struggling on the ice, and it was obvious in watching him. And Mike Bales has done a great job with him in getting him refocused and maybe working on him a little bit more technically sound, a little bit more positionally sound. He's always been good in that department, but maybe just a little bit more focused on maintaining his position and cutting off the correct angles and staying mentally engaged in a game for 60 minutes, which sounds easier than it is to do in the National Hockey League with all the bumping around the net and all the action in front of you. But, yeah, he's really been strong this year. Three shutouts in his last game. He had a shutout against Carolina, and he'll be back in net tonight against the Flyers, a team that he's pretty much had a lot of success against in his career. I know that one playoff series will come to mind when a lot of people think of Penguins and Flyers, where both he and Ilya Bryzgalov struggled big time for both teams. But he's 24-17-2 all-time against Philadelphia, so he'll look to build upon that tonight.
The Flyer-Penguin rivalry is interesting because Philly and Pittsburgh do not really have a rivalry in other sports. I mean, the Eagles and Steelers rarely play. The Pirates and Phillies don't play that often. They're not in the same division anymore. except for this. What is it about this rivalry?
I think it has to do with when the two teams came to the league, to be honest with you. I mean, maybe it wasn't at the heightened portion there. It actually definitely wasn't than it is right now. But they're both in the class of 1967. Oh. And when they first came in, the Flyers, I think, had a lot of success right off the bat, and the Penguins weren't quite as lucky, or maybe as successful is the right word. And things kind of flip-flopped throughout really the decades. I mean, we know that the Mario Lemieux, Jaromir Jagr Penguin teams were phenomenal, and then you had the Broad Street Bullies, obviously, in Philadelphia in the 70s, and now the Malkin and Crosby-led Penguins have gone against a lot of different supporting casts with the Flyers. It was the Mike Richards, Jeff Carter group, and now you have the Claude Giroux, Wayne Simmons, Jake Voracek group. So I think that the rivalry is just kind of heightened because really you look through the decades and it's kind of flip-flop for which city and which team has kind of had the bragging rights. But recently, I mean, despite the Penguins, I think, being a better overall team in the standings and maybe having more longevity to their seasons, the Flyers have been the team between the two that have really controlled the play. They've won the last 8 meetings between these two teams, and specifically at Consol Energy Center, where the two teams are playing tonight in Pittsburgh. Since it opened, the Flyers have basically owned this place. They're 11-1-1 here. So the Penguins definitely need to figure out a way to, I guess, exercise the demons against them. But, it's one of the better rivalries. For my money, it's the best rivalry in hockey. Definitely should be a fun one tonight.
Yeah, I think so. Josh, when you look at the Penguins, and here it is, mid-January. What signs indicate to you that they're a rock-solid playoff team? What signs indicate to you that it's a struggle to get there?
Well, I think it will be a struggle. I do think they're a playoff team. I think they can get in for sure, but I do think it'll be a struggle for them really till the end, mainly because of how the schedule sets up. I mean, they're going to play, I think it's of their final 30 odd 30 whatever games, I think it's like 36 games left in the season, they're playing 20 games within the Metropolitan Division. And we know with the new format in the National Hockey League with the playoffs, the top 3 teams in the Metro will make it, and then you'll battle for a wild card spot. So they could conceivably push themselves way up into the Metro, into those top, probably second or third slots, because I don't think anyone's going to catch Washington with the play they've had lately. But you know, the New York Islanders and New York Rangers are right there right now, and the Penguins are only 5-6 points behind those teams. They've yet to play the Rangers this season. That's 4 matchups right there. This is the first of 4 against Philadelphia. They still have 3 against the New York Islanders and a couple more against the Hurricanes, the Blue Jackets, the Capitals. These teams that where these 4-point swing games are so important, they can take advantage of them. Now, of course, you say that, and you have to actually take advantage of it, which the Penguins did not do last year. They're very poor in the Metropolitan Division. It almost cost them a playoff spot down the stretch. But this year, so far, they're 4-4-2, I believe, in Metro play. So tonight they can move to over 500 in the division, and that's going to be the key for them. If they can compete and win a lot of divisional games here down the stretch, they'll be in. If they don't, then they're not going to get in.
You see the talent level night in and night out across the board, not just the Penguins, but across the board in this league. I was just in Las Vegas doing basketball about a month ago, and I saw the brand new arena. There's been a lot of talk about the possibility of a team there, the possibility of maybe a team in Quebec or in Seattle. Can this league, in your opinion, based on the talent level you see night in and night out, sustain expansion teams?
That's a good question. I think that based on the young infusion of talent that we've seen, I think that it's definitely possible, but you do worry about that. I mean, you worry about looking at a fourth line, looking at maybe a marginal top 9 winger playing on a team that maybe doesn't deserve to be there, has no business of being there. You don't want to necessarily water down the product. I think that's a concern that a lot of people would have in that situation, among other things, obviously, but on the same token, you have seen a lot of these young guys step in, and then there are other guys who, I mean, for example, just talking to a couple of the St. Louis broadcasters, Steve Ott, a guy who has been in the league forever, it seems like, with Buffalo, with Dallas, now with the St. Louis Blues, kind of struggling to make their lineup. And he's maybe a guy that if the league expands, he's probably got a spot somewhere in the National Hockey League. But it's interesting. Guys that, you know, once, as you said earlier, once these guys hit their late 20s, all of a sudden you're hoping you get that next contract if you're not a big-name superstar. And maybe that helps if the league expands, and maybe that becomes a non-factor. But it would be interesting to see how it would have a trickle-down effect as far as the talent depth-wise on a lot of the teams.
Appreciate the answer very much, and also appreciate having you on the show. Thanks so much. I think a lot of Penguin fans up here in this country, they love it. So thanks for the time, as always.
Hey, no problem. We'll be on tonight at 6 o'clock, so we'll catch you then. Thanks.
Thank you, Josh. All right, we'll come back with more in a moment. The Kevin Herr Clam Bake on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Great to have you with us. We're here at the Jordan Center. Penn State, Wisconsin tonight. Greg Gard now, the head coach. We'll have a beat writer from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel on later in the show. John Gruden wants replay out in the National Football League. It's here to stay. I mean, now they've got to clean things up. But like anything, it takes a little while to tweak something, get it right. I mean, and they got to clean up. It's something Kevin brought up, like, you know, what's a catch and what's not a catch. I mean, I think it's pathetic that the NFL can't tell you what a catch is. I mean, I know what a catch is.
Steve, there's too much gray area in the NFL rule book. They need to clean out the gray area in the rule book. And I think that's something they need to do this spring.
Such as?
Well, what's a catch? What isn't a catch? You know, exactly what is a fumble? If the arm's down or the elbow's down, is that the same as the knee? There's so much gray area that has to be interpreted. They need to clean it up a little bit. Once they clean that up, I think it'll be better.
I think an elbow or part of your body, I think they cleaned that up a long time ago. I mean, I see it now. I know automatically when I see something, say, okay, the elbow's down, it's not a fumble.
You know, when are you a runner as opposed to a defenseless receiver? You got to clean that up a little bit. You know, the catch is the biggest.
I think they need to change the penalty on that. I think if you get two unsportsmanlike conduct penalties in the NFL, it should be thrown out.
No, that's the way it is in college, and it seemed to make college a lot different. I mean, guys are a lot more cautious when they're making hits. There's good and bad to that, but it's safer.
It is safer, but I also think that they need to, that's part of cleaning it up, is I think you've got to, you know, make it very personal for these guys and tell them in no uncertain terms that you get a second one, you're out, you're done. You're done for the day. And I think that's, you know, that's important. Now, what's a catch? I think that's the one where you sit back and say, what in the heck's going on here?
That's the big one.
You know, I think that's the big one. And the other stuff like an elbow down, a body part, so forth, I think that was cleaned up a long time ago. I watched the game. I know right away if a guy's down or not. I mean, don't you? I mean, when you're not being prejudiced about the game.
Yeah, well, that happens a lot, though, when I'm prejudiced, so it's hard to say.
It's a Steeler. He can't be down.
I still think he was down before he fumbled the ball at the end of the Broncos game. Just kidding.
You talking about Toussaint?
Yes. All right, so I was hoping he was down. I was hoping there'd be some type of reversal. It didn't happen.
No offense, there's still several feet between him and the ground when the ball's loose.
Oh, no, no. Like, it was a feet. Fumble. It was a fumble. But I was hoping.
Feet. Not in the game of inches. Feet.
Guy can still
How
have
could you
hope.
Have hoped for that?
A guy can still
How
have hope.
How could you have hoped for that?
I wasn't
that was
even
one of
against
the
begging.
Calls of the year.
I was not even against begging at that point either.
Let's face it. I think the audience knows you lost pride a long time ago.
Gone.
Even Sean Carey still has a little bit of pride. Not much, but a little.
It's waning.
You're fresh out.